So I'll be talking today about mobilizing a coalition to influence physical activity policy in Chicago and across the state of Illinois. I have no relationships to disclose, so feel free to see me after. A little bit about Clock's background and history. We were founded, as our moderator said, in 2002. We currently have more than 3,000 individuals in the network representing about 1,200 organizations. And we have five major goals: to build a network of practitioners, researchers, community advocates, et cetera, focused on childhood obesity prevention, to develop and disseminate culturally appropriate interventions, to provide public education around the causes and effects of obesity and its solutions, improving the science and practice of obesity through research and evaluation, and then creating a sustained funding base for obesity prevention in the city and across the state. We have three frameworks that guide our work. The first is a social ecological approach, which means that we focus on factors at individual, family, institutional, community, and social policy levels, and have partners in the consortium who have expertise at all of those levels, because it's very difficult for one organization to be able to do all of those things. So the coalition model really works when it comes to social ecology. We focus on strategy development, so we're not a research-intensive coalition. We're also not a direct service organization or coalition, although many of our partners do provide direct service. But really, as a consortium, our goal is to develop strategy that can be implemented across the city, and then taking a look at health equity and ensuring that what we do has a health equity focus. And I think central to all of this is that policy systems and environmental change strategies are really a critical part of what we do, and that's what I'm going to be talking about today. So just a brief look at childhood obesity in Chicago. This is done a slide from research done by the Sinai Urban Health Institute a number of years ago that shows a comparison of childhood obesity rates in, I think it's six neighborhoods in Chicago compared to Chicago. So Chicago's all the way there on the left, and the lighter blue bar is for overweight, so kids between the 85th and 95th percentile of body mass index for their age and sex. And then the sort of burgundy bar is obesity, so above the 95th percentile. So you see in Chicago, which is similar across the country, we have a much greater obesity problem than an overweight problem. And you also see the neighborhoods in the middle, the five neighborhoods in the middle, are predominantly racial and ethnic minority communities, some mostly black, some mostly Hispanic, and then a couple that are both, that are a little bit more mixed. But in comparison both to the Chicago average and to Norwood Park, which is a predominantly white neighborhood of around the same socioeconomic status, you see that we have significant disparities in childhood obesity in communities of color in Chicago. And here's a manifestation of that same dynamic here. Probably not unfamiliar to many of you who work in physical activity. These are two different neighborhoods in Chicago. On the left is Chinatown, which is actually just west of where we are here. And there's this poor soul trying to cross the street. Unfortunately, no cars right now, but if there were, I don't know what he would be doing. And then Chicago's River North neighborhood, which received the first protected bike lane in Chicago when Mayor Emanuel took office. There are certainly a lot more of those now around the city, and they're doing a better and better job of reaching underserved and lower-income communities, but we still have disparities in how the environments look in communities and whether or not they support physical activity. So in terms of developing strategy through a coalition approach, our policy systems and environmental change approach includes doing a best practice scan nationally and locally, and then looking at neighborhood-level data, doing neighborhood-level assessments when needed, organizing at the neighborhood level, implementing strategies to solve problems, and then, and when possible, evaluating those impacts to be able to scale up. Clock staff develop partnerships with organizations that serve as mediating structures at the neighborhood level, so it's not necessarily with neighborhood residents per se, but really with organizations that represent communities, could be block clubs, could be community-based organizations and nonprofits, could be park advisory councils, local school councils, etc. But they serve as a liaison between more of the sort of city-wide agencies and then the neighborhood residents. We partner with organizations that have jurisdiction over critical environments where policy can be implemented and that have content and or process expertise that can help shape and advance policy at city, state, and federal levels. We identify neighborhoods where there's demonstrated commitment to obesity prevention or increasing physical activity or land use transformation to focus the work around physical activity policy, and then select policy approaches that will make physical activity easier through environmental change and or facilitate physical activity programming where children are most frequently found. So institutional policy gets at that second point, that finding where kids congregate, whether it's at school or on playgrounds or in childcare or after school programs, that those are places where policy is going to be most important. So a couple of examples of how we've applied this approach. The first is our Complete Streets work here in Chicago. We at CLOC start with what we call our Neighborhood Walkability Initiative. It helps community organizations identify and address obstacles to walking on the streets and sidewalks in their neighborhood. So it develops kind of a sense of awareness in the neighborhood about the condition of their streets and sidewalks. That assessment is followed by guidelines for short-term strategies that can be implemented by community members and organizations. We call those in the walkability assessment things we can do now. And then there are longer-term strategies that are identified and action plans that are developed to address those. For example, street infrastructure changes, and we call those things we need help with. So it both gets at things that communities can do right away to address the things that they've identified, but then also starts talking about who do they need to connect to make these broader kinds of changes that they don't have the capacity to do on their own. The Neighborhood Walkability Initiative also helped CLOC as an organization establish credibility as a network builder for physical activity policy, and that allowed us then to be heard by policymakers and in context where real decisions, these sort of broader decisions can be made. Our partnership with the Chicago Department of Transportation helped us to elicit priorities for a federal funding initiative. We, CLOC, led for the City of Chicago the obesity element of communities putting prevention to work, and Complete Streets was one of the priorities that CDOT wanted to have in that initiative. The funds through CPPW helped us to hire contractors and consultants to work alongside of CDOT and other organizations to make more formal, what we call big P policy changes, such as the Complete Streets policy, and then little P policy changes that were already sort of on the books with the City of Chicago. The result here was that we now have a Complete Streets Chicago Design Guidelines published by the Chicago Department of Transportation. It governs all street infrastructure projects and emphasizes pedestrian use and safety, and it was seen to be, perceived to be fairly radical because it prioritizes, it's a document coming out of a Department of Transportation, and it prioritizes pedestrians. This is the cover of the design guidelines, and you can find it if you Google it. It's on the city's website. And many of our partners were engaged, Melody's organization certainly key among them. I want to talk a little bit about how the coalition supported all the great work that Abby just talked about at CPS. For those who don't know, Illinois is often cited as being among the top states in the U.S. for PE policy in schools. We've had that esteemed recognition for many, many years, but the truth of it was that we had a fairly robust waiver system, and entire districts could waive out of that PE requirement for a whole host of reasons. So the implementation didn't really match the reputation of the policy. The policy itself required daily PE for all grades, K through 12, and as Abby explained, that wasn't even happening in the CPS district for a lot of reasons. One of the early successes we had in implementation was we limited those waivers. The coalition partners worked to limit those waivers, so now districts can apply only for 2 3-year maximum waivers, so 6 years, and then they have to try to comply. CPS got brave and decided that they would not even wait until their limit was up, and they started initiating these policy changes even before that 6-year mark came. But implementation across the state is fairly weak. Many school districts are still not meeting the requirement, and there's an ongoing battle at the state level to fend off bills every General Assembly session that would undermine the PE requirement. And our governor just recently named PE as one of the quote-unquote unfunded mandates that he would support getting rid of. So we're in a constant battle in the state to protect the good work that districts like CPS are doing. So at Chicago Public Schools, we're one of, I think it's now 7 strategic partners who worked with the Office of Health and Wellness that Abby described to help develop their PE policy. We, as a consortium, provided several listening session opportunities for CPS staff to present their draft policy to school-focused CLOC partner organizations, so some of the sessions that Abby talked about. We provided public testimony for the board and met individually with the Board of Education members to discuss the importance of the new and improved PE policy because they were hearing from all sides, all kinds of perspectives on that. And then we issued calls to action to the CLOC membership, the 30,000 plus folks that I talked about, to help support the policy. And the result, as Abby eloquently shared with us, was new PE policy at CPS and no waiver. CPS decided they would not apply for a waiver after 2014. And you heard about the benchmarks that they're now striving for. And here is the movement. This is the report that we helped CPS put together. This is on the CPS website, and it's a really great documentation of their process and the PE policies, all the physical activity policies. Physical activity and licensed childcare, I mentioned important contexts where children congregate, so childcare is certainly another important context. Our work as a coalition started with standards in the city of Chicago. They were voluntary standards developed through what we had a multi-agency interdepartmental task force for childhood obesity prevention, which was 11 city agencies working together on childhood obesity prevention efforts. And the Department of Children and Family Children and Youth Services, which is now the Department of Family and Support Services, worked with the Chicago Health Department to develop new standards for childcare. CLOC then received Healthy Eating Research, Active Living Research dollars to assess the impact of these new standards in child care centers. We found that the policy alone made little to no difference in child care practices. Our partner Illinois Action for Children then led an in-depth training and evaluation of the implementation of these new standards in a broader array of child care settings, and we found that the policy combined with training does lead to change in child care practices. And so we took those results on the road. We did active dissemination to diverse agency audiences, local, state agencies, nonprofits, government, et cetera, to really promote that you can be successful at childcare changes. And so then we turned our attention, because in Chicago they don't have purview over most of the childcare licensing requirements. They have purview over food and safety, but in terms of curriculum and other kinds of practices, they have no purview. So really, to make a difference, you have to focus on the state licensing requirements. So sort of serendipitously, the Illinois Early Learning Council, which is a governor-appointed council focused on early education, created a health subcommittee, and because of some of the work that we were doing and how loud we were being about it, I was invited to co-chair the health subcommittee, which gave me a pivotal leadership position to start promoting these changes within the state. Our council leadership then shared the Chicago experience with the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, which is the licensing organization for childcare in Illinois. And they were encouraged by the results and agreed to work with us on developing standards for statewide licensing requirements. So the subcommittee leadership then submitted recommendations for statewide requirements. There was a 90-day public comment period on the published first draft of those requirements. And during that time, we sent out lots of calls to action to our coalition members to support and to give positive feedback to those requirements. The results of that coalition process were that what we call Rule 407 was adopted in August of 2014, and it requires 60 minutes of a minimum of physical activity for full-day students over 2 years. A half of that time must be teacher-led, and then a maximum of 30-minute sedentary time allowable during the day. There's a lot of other standards related to food, but this is a physical activity session, so I won't go into those. A few lessons learned about our coalition approach to support policy change. First, it's important to identify multiple key institutions and contexts for a focus. Use data to assess gaps and successes in small-scale implementation, especially for big bureaucratic institutions. They tend to want to know that they're going to be successful before they roll something out across the whole system. You heard Abby talk about the 30-20-10, so doing small-scale pilots to show success kind of greases the wheels, if you will, for broad-scale policy change. Disseminate. So what good is the work you do unless you really talk about it? And it was the dissemination that we did that really caught the attention of bigger, larger scale policymakers and decision makers, and why we were able to be so successful in these things. Partner with influential organizations for the insider angle, but also with grassroots organizations for the external pressure. So we often, as a coalition, play the sort of insider-outsider line because we think it's important to motivate and mobilize in both arenas. Acknowledge the strengths and congratulate the key players on successes. It keeps them coming back. If you just harass them to make the change and then you don't laud the change they make, they're not going to really turn to you the next time and in a harder battle. And then finally, when policy is passed, you have to immediately switch your focus to defense, certainly in our case, and to implementation. We all, I think, know that just passing a policy doesn't mean that the policy gets implemented, and so that's a really critical next step after you've succeeded at policy change. And that is it for me.